You're listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to another episode of The Soul Chronicles, the podcast where we explore life and times navigating the sneaker industry, sports industry, Hollywood, and corporate America. I'm one of your hosts, Mohammeda Omuhajir, joined with...
Hi, I'm Nikita Newell Hall. Welcome to the show.
So today we are going to talk about one of the biggest rap groups probably of our time. They just had such a huge impact on music. They did some just really, they broke the boundaries of what could be done with artists signing to multiple labels, just the sound of the streets. We are talking about the Wu-Tang Clan. So we have a story about some things that happened with Wu-Tang during our time at Nike, as well as a lot of projects that I worked with on personally with Method Man. So I guess we will start with Method Man, then we'll kind of like go into like the Wu-Tang story, which is a little controversial. So I did, Nikita, probably when I first started at Nike, I feel like there was, I don't know if Method Man had just released the album or if it was like a Redman Method Man album, I don't know, but whatever was happening with Method Man at the time, they were just like blowing up. And I felt like maybe within the first month of me working at Nike, I had to work on a music video. And I rounded up a bunch of product because those guys, all those Def Jam guys, loved Nike. And you had been working with them for some time. And then I just kind of like took the baton and sort of continued the work that we were doing with them. So I was going to this Method Man shoot, and it turns out to be Method Man and Fred Durst. I probably should have looked up the name of that song. You know that? Do you remember this?
Girl, now you know, I don't remember anything, but you keep going. I definitely am going to look it up.
Okay, look it up while we're all here. Okay, so it was this Fred Durst and Method Man song. It could have been Fred Durst song because, you know, Limp Bizkit. Yeah, Limp Bizkit. But I felt like it was a solo project that Fred Durst had done. So listen,
Limp Bizkit. Is it in Together Now?
I think so. That sounds like it. Yeah, yeah. I think
yeah, that so was it. Limp Bizkit's the artist. Method Man is just making a cameo.
Okay. Now, you know, from the first episode, had some driving challenges. And I just remember. So listen, I just remember going to this video shoot. I feel like it was in the Valley, maybe something like that. I had to take the 101. Okay. Now this was probably my first time on the 101. It was just like, isn't that like 6-7 lanes? I don't know how many lanes it is. But
yeah.
When I first learned how to drive, I had a serious problem taking my eyes off the front of the road to look into the side mirrors. And to get over 6 lanes, you got to do a lot of looking in that like right hand mirror. Girl. I swear I closed my eyes.
Oh, God.
Swear I closed my eyes crossing the lanes on that 101 trying to get to this video shoot. And I must have been so, I probably was shaking by the time I got to the video shoot. You know, I couldn't tell nobody that, but whew, so I made it.
Why didn't we just hire you a driver? I mean, seriously, that would have solved so many issues.
Well, oh, God, I know. We should have. Anyway, I made it to the shoot, and I had like all these bags of stuff for Meth and for Fred Durst. And this was the first time that I actually met one of my really, really good friends. You know how the industry is. I mean, you know people, but it's not always that people turn out to be your friends. And Shanita Floyd, who was Method Man's product manager and so many other artists that I work with, she was on the shoot that day, and I was proud to say I'm still friends with her to this day. I felt like I probably sent her a message like a week or two ago. So shout out to Shanita. Shout out to the whole like Def Jam family. I mean, I felt like we were kind of
Hey, Shanita. Yes.
We were like part of the family. So I dropped off the stuff, you know, hung out on the set for a little while, and then I left. But I met Shanita that day. I met Meth. And oddly enough, I just remembered this. I hadn't met him before, but when I used to be a casting director, I did casting for one of his videos called Bring the Pain, which was actually, I think that was like his second single. And the director, Diane Martel, one of the top female directors from back in the day, directed that video. And I used to cast a lot of her videos. And one of them was a Method Man video. But on the set that day, I didn't really like talk to them. I don't go out of my way to talk to artists unless it's absolutely necessary. But, or it just comes up, but I don't just go out of my way. So I hadn't met him on the video, on the his personal video shoot way back in the day before I worked at Nike. And then here I am. I kind of started the relationship from this particular video shoot. And then it kind of went from there. And he wore a lot of the Nike stuff in the video. So we'll post it on our social media. So definitely look out for that. So yeah, so that
absolutely.
Was, yeah, that was the first time that I worked with him.
Small world, such yeah. a small world.
It really is.
And yeah, and I think, no, I was about to say it's a small world. And I think no matter what we do or how far we go, somehow we keep running into some of the same people and seeing how people's careers grow and evolve. And again, it's really fun to me to watch a lot of the celebrities that we work with and that a lot of them we're still in contact with, just watch their careers evolve. Like right now, how Method is trending on Facebook. With the video, that's just simply how fine is he still?
Right.
He has a really amazing film career. He's one of the handful of hip hop artists who've been able to parlay their careers and become serious actors. I mean, and are really good and believable in their work to him. And he definitely has that staying power, that sex appeal that generations of women now can actually swoon over. And it's funny because I didn't work necessarily a lot with him in particular. I think when I was at Nike in music, I was more so working probably with the group as a whole, just in terms of getting product to them and building that relationship.
Coming to Method Man again. So, you know, after I lived and worked in LA for a year, I moved back to New York, right? So I worked together with the Hollywood team and also with, I was a part of the New York office. And you know, one thing that all the artists wanted, they wanted to find out how they could be on a Nike commercial. That was just such a huge thing. And to be honest, artists really did not appear in any commercials. I mean, if we got their music, that was pretty much the biggest thing that we could do with an artist. And we did that with many artists. We talked about Pharrell, we talked about The Roots, we talked about Mos Def, you know, where we got the music in. But one particular time in New York, we had an opportunity to have an artist be in a commercial, right? So they came to me with the idea, and we talk in a few episodes about how disconnected the brand people are to the streets and to the artists and to what's hot. So listen, there was this whole New York basketball commercial that they were going to do, and the artist that they wanted to use, and this is by no means disrespect to the artist, but I'm just saying the year was probably like 2002 or something. So this particular artist just wasn't as relevant as many other artists. So listen, they came to me with this New York basketball commercial they wanted to do, and they were like, and yes, and we want to use the Beastie Boys. I'm sorry. Okay. Like I said, no disrespect to the Beastie Boys. They go down in hip hop history.
You can't at all diss the Beastie Boys, and nobody would try to, but for that, then no, it's an actual zero. No, thank you.
Like, are you serious? And I am just not an ass kicker. I would get in trouble in New York all the time because they could see from my face when I didn't like an idea. I wouldn't even care, and I was like, "What? And so they were like, okay, well, give us some suggestions. And I was thinking, okay, who is like super New York? Jay-Z wasn't having it. You know, he just was out of the question. And we heard about why from our other previous episodes. So
I don't know why you find a way to like loop him in every episode.
Because,
but anyway, go ahead.
Just because we talk about New York. No, I mean, okay, so fine. So I had Method Man on my list because, again, we also talk about the people who we work very closely with. So when they come through for us, they wear our stuff in their videos. They stay hot. Those are our guys, right? So Method Man. And then I think Fat Joe had some kind of song out then. And I was like, oh, it'd be dope to have, like, somebody from the Bronx, Puerto Rican. You know, I think I put him on the list. And I don't remember who my third person, right? But I put three. They went back. I don't know who they was talking to reviewing my list. But anyway, they came back and they said, okay, they would go with Method Man. Now, the funny thing with Method Man is that Wu-Tang Clan had a manager, and I guess it was Divine, which is RZA's brother. And I think he was supposed to be Meth's manager, but I never dealt with them. I dealt with Def Jam people for all his business. I dealt with Shanita. She's like, all right, you got to go talk to Kevin about it. So they were working as his managers, right? And so eventually James Ellis, who's his manager right now, who actually was Redman's manager, but because they did so many things together, he inadvertently did a lot for Method Man and still is his manager today. So shout out to James. So anyway, they were like, yes, we want Method Man. So I went to talk to Kevin. He was like, yeah, they negotiated his money and everything, right? So we agreed Method Man was going to do, and he wasn't even acting at this point, but he was like the star of this commercial. He learned his lines so fast. I mean, he just brought so much character. He did such an amazing job. We shot this on the rooftop of like the New Yorker Hotel? Yeah, New Yorker Hotel in Manhattan. I think it's on 34th Street. And I was a little nervous because from day one, I work with Shanita. And for some reason on this particular day, she wasn't going to be able to be there. And I'm like, oh Lord, you know, artists, if you don't have the
I got to do this with talent management. Girl. No, Mohammed does not want to do any sort of the thing.
Right. And she was like, listen, Phelan is going to be the person. And Phelan is great. You're gonna be fine. And I was like, oh God. Turns out Phelan was amazing. I think Phelan is still in the industry to this day doing, I don't know, I'm not sure what, but yeah, so she was there that day. And it was like a crazy day. We were in Midtown, so on breaks, Meth needed to go buy some jewelry, probably from, Jacob the jeweler.
Remember Jacob, that guy? Yeah.
So yeah. I think we had to like go to, like, it was just like a crazy day. It was great. He was amazing. It was like such a perfect fit for this commercial.
Yo, we all have to come to grips with something in today's world of free agency and blockbuster trades. As much as we can't stand guys like Alonzo Mourning and Reggie Miller, they might be playing for us someday. And you know what? We love them. Reggie, you shooting daggers into people's heart. Alonzo, blocking somebody else's shot. Hey, yo! Hey, yo! We may hate them now, but we'd love them if they were in our jerseys.
Yeah, and I just feel like the New York people were like, okay, she knows what she's talking about. But, you know, as we said so many times, we had to just keep proving ourselves each and every time, right?
Ooh, if proving yourself was a person.
Wow.
I promise you. But, you know, another thing that I wanted to point out, and shout out Kevin Lyles. I mean, we did so many amazing things with him as well and always had
to get Kevin
support.
On here as a guest.
One love, right? No doubt.
You will see if how intimately work with people that when somebody on the outside says that they know the artist, the people at Nike had no idea how well we knew them, right? So there's nobody in the industry who could know them better than we did. Maybe it could have been equal, but it wasn't more. I'm going to tell you that. The labels or something.
Yeah, of course. And if there were people in the sneaker industry who knew them more, which there weren't,
no.
What they were doing, though, Muhammad, this is really critical for me. They were leveraging the product to get themselves in the door. Like, these are people who just in and of themselves, celebrities weren't going to deal with them.
Right.
Like, just regular guy, no names. Regular guy walking down the street in his own circle, in his own world. These people were never going to deal with you. So you needed that product to be like, oh, I'm your XYZ sneaker guy. And so that's how you got on. And that's why you got accepted. But who you were as just a person, it's just no way. Right. It's like the very mediocre nerd dude, not nothing against nerds, right? But, you know, gets rich and then now you got all the chicks, right?
Right.
But without the money though, sir. And so that was the other thing. And that was our point of difference is, yeah, this was my job. Absolutely. But we were down before. We were doing our thing before this. And we, you know, we're going to be successful with or without Nike, not to be arrogant, just stating the facts. And so that's what the benefit Nike had of having us.
Yes.
Right? The benefit we got was they paid us. Great. We got a check. The benefit they had is that they had us and we had these very real relationships. That was the other difference with us is that we didn't need to leverage Nike product in order to have great relationships, because long after we weren't at Nike anymore, we still had the relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the one thing that I, you know, just found very interesting and also very frustrating. Because again, you know, when we talk about some of the things that made our roles difficult at Nike, particularly around trying to get along with the men who were working in the industry, in the organization. You know, I would say to you all the time, and I don't even know if you remember this, but I would say, you know, I'm not mad. If you want to hang out with XYZ rapper, and that's really all the people they really mess with, right? They weren't trying to go be in Celine Dion's face or Elton John's face, Janet Jackson's face. Oh, it was the hip hop dudes, right? And so because they were fans. And so my point of view was, okay, fine, product developer person. If you want to hang out with Jay-Z, go ahead. Go be friends with him. Y'all go drinking, hang out, have fun. That could be your boy. That's your personal business. But when you bring the work into it, now that's not your role anymore. And then when you try to exclude me and don't want to collaborate, but you just want to take it and snatch it, something that we've built and something that we are strategically executing. And I mean, I think that's the piece too. I mean, you're a degreed woman. You're very brilliant. You're incredibly intelligent. We weren't just two chicks that fell off the back of some truck somewhere and was like, oh, okay, yeah, we're just going to do this. No, there's a lot of strategy and a lot of thought and a lot of passion that goes into building some of the relationships for the brand piece of our job, of our role. We talk about the life and times, right, in the sneaker industry. And I don't think we can really, honestly, Muhammada, talk about all of this stuff unless we really get honest with our audience about some of the hard times in the business. And so for me, Wu-Tang, not the group, but the experience with Wu-Tang is one of the more sort of painful memories that I have being at Nike and in the sneaker industry. One thing we talk about as women in these roles, the industries are just very male dominated. It's not like the most horrible thing in the world. Oh, we have to work with men. Isn't that horrible? No. That's not the problem. The problem is when the men collectively get together to exclude you, to go around you, to demean and diminish your authority and your role, just doing stuff because they want to do it. And then having the authority of leadership in the organization, because leadership in the organization, you're talking about president, vice president, CEO, they're male as well, right? So all the men can get together and sort of make decisions about your role, which my role was entertainment. And because that's something that everybody wants to be a part of, all the men can get together and just sort of decide that they want to dibble and dabble in your particular category. And then again, that in and of itself wouldn't be so bad if they came in with a collaborative mindset, Muhammada. You know what I'm saying? Like, it'd be one thing if all the men got together and they were like, we were thinking, we'd really love to do this. But since this is your department, since this is your expertise, how can we work together to accomplish this other piece? Because perhaps it affects my role. Maybe I'm in product development, or maybe I'm in design, or maybe I'm in retail. And we really want to leverage entertainment to help really propel the brand and maybe some of these other departments. To me, that makes the most sense, but that's not what they do. It's not what they did. And it wasn't my experience. It really had a lot to do with why I no longer wanted to work at Nike anymore. Because it just got incredibly difficult having all these internal battles, not to mention the stay on top in sneakers in particular was not easy because there are competitors. I mean, Reebok is there, Adidas, Puma, all these other brands who want to knock you off because we were on top. And so there's a lot that we had to continually do to make sure that the brand excelled. I mean, you could put out a dope pair of kicks. I mean, that's one thing. But if nobody sees them, if nobody's talking about them, if there's not people behind the scenes making sure that the public embraces it, then, I mean, whatever. There's a lot of nice product out in the world. And yeah, with Wu-Tang, I mean, I think they were one of the first artists who had a branded shoe. It was the Dunk. It was done totally behind my back. It was done in the most sneakily sort of underhanded way that I could have ever imagined. And it really was sort of one of the turning points where I just started to hate my job. Because again, when you undermine me in that way, when I'm talking to other artists now, Muhammada, about an integrated plan or integrated plans that would also include shoes, that would also include all these other things. And then out of the blue, boom, here's a Wu-Tang Dunk, which I'm all for the Wu-Tang Dunk. Trust me. Like, I don't have a problem with that at all. But what I would have loved to have seen is a whole plan behind it. Did the guys get paid from that? I don't know.
People might not know what happened, how that whole thing happened. So I think we should maybe speak a little bit about that, and then people could maybe have an understanding of, you know, what kind of this behind the scenes process that was going on I feel like it started out something that wasn't necessarily entertainment related, right? So you've got the sales team, right, which we don't really have a lot to do with them. They're selling and we are marketing. Then you have the product development guys, right? They develop the product, we market it again, those people sell it. So what happens is when you have someone, which is rare that you have a retailer, okay, who has relationships with entertainment. I mean, that's pretty rare, right? But we have a guy who's still pretty relevant today, I believe, who was Udi, who was the owner of Training Camp, which was a sneaker chain in New York City. So I believe they had maybe 6-7 stores, one in Staten Island, Manhattan, Brooklyn. And so through these stores, because the rappers lived in all the neighborhoods where the stores were, they would go into the store, buy sneakers all the time, and they became friends with Udi, the owner. So he did have a relationship with them. I'm not going to say that he didn't.
No, okay. He definitely did. 100%. Right.
So when our salespeople, he's probably one of their top outlets in New York. So you know how it is. They want to always make their retailers happy and do collaborations, blah, blah, blah. So somehow in that whole mix, Udi is like, I don't know. I don't know exactly how the conversation went, but he must have been like, yeah, I be with Wu-Tang. We should do a shoe with them. I know them. Let me call Raekwon on the phone. I bet you it went something like that. The sales guy is all hyped and excited. The product guys, you know how hype they was on to try to do something like this. So all this, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, so I think people get a good, this is a good picture of all the different moving parts. But I think for me and what I heard, and I'm going to go on record as saying is what I heard. Okay. Right. So I'm not 100% sure, is that there was a trip to New York to meet with several people, including some retailers, but then also other people who worked at other brands, other sneaker brands, mm-hmm. who our guys, I'm talking about the Black guys who worked with us, went and told our
And they were product developer guys were the main ones, right?
They were the main ones, but I think it was more than just them, to be honest, okay. Muhammad. But they went to the head of the company, basically told him, oh, there's a guy, or let's say guys, right, to not make it too obvious, who are way more down and dope than our girls. These girls that we have in LA, no. It's some guys in New York working at other competing sneaker brands who they way more down and connected. And then the word got back to me that our guy, our the head of our company was like, oh, we need to hire them or kill them. You know, I mean, obviously in a funny way. Mm-hmm. But how are you going to go and tell him that it's somebody out there doper than me? Like, really? Well, first of all, it's a whole lie and a half, because that person, or let's say those people, stay calling me, asking me for jobs. That person stay calling me, Muhammad, saying, yo, you know, I really want to be down with Nike, this, that, and the other. Yo, I can't get in with nobody. Listen, Muhammad, I can't get in with nobody, because every time I try this, because I almost said the other brand hired the person to directly counter the work that we were doing, right? Mm-hmm. So, but the person was down as hell. I never had a person with a problem with the person, but would be calling me on the back end, Muhammad, yo, I can't get my products on nobody, because whenever I try to reach out to these dudes, they be like, no, I only mess with Nikita and them at Nike. No, I'm cool. Nike's taking care of me. Now, we weren't paying these people, Muhammad. You weren't paying these people. They were turning down free product from this other guy at this other brand, who later went to go work very successfully on the label side.
Now, speaking of Method Man, that actually happened where somebody told me that they brought him some product sneakers from another brand, and he was like, nah, because my girl Muhammad look out for me. I was like, yes, that's probably why I gave him that commercial.
Yeah, I'm telling you, that is why. Look in the chat. I'm asking you if that's the brand. I don't want to say the brand because everybody.
No. Mine was another one. Yeah, okay. That incident was with another brand. So what happened with the Wu-Tang Dunks? They made them. I don't know how many they did. It was a limited edition. Special makeup.
I have no idea.
I think it probably was maybe sold only at training camps. I mean, these were like some super limited edition. I guess it was just to like, kind of make the Dunks hot on the street. There, like you said, there was no strategy. There was no strategy.
Right.
And the product development guys, the sales guys, they're not marketing guys, right? Like they just were like, yeah, yeah, this sounds good. They should have brought it to us so we could have been a part of it and put some marketing.
Or put it in the funnel. Or put it in a funnel because we already had, you feel like you need to go to these outside people to get these relationships that we already have. I just told you, who was higher than Kevin Lyons? I mean, who had a better relationship with Meth and Red than Shanita? I mean, I'll wait. I have time today. So no. And so what you're doing is you're diluting your own self by going outside. Now you owe this person who knows what. You see what I'm saying? And yeah, maybe that did help your sales relationship. I'm not mad at that, but maybe there's a way that you can creatively within your own toolbox figure out how to have very robust relationships with your retailers. And so I think Muhammada, I think it was some hands slapped because of that. And in their mind, this is what they, because I already know. In your mind, you were bucking the system. In your mind, you were going around doing whatever you had to because this really needed to happen and you don't have to go through the proper channels. And you don't care who you step on. You don't care. It's two Black girls out here scraping for their lives, not only just trying to matriculate within the company, but also out here against all these other big brands, hiring people who did not look like us, and we're still winning. But you, sir, would go around us, lie on us, try to demean and diminish our reputation within the organization so that you could, get a dunk made? And what had happened was they were doing little small, sneaky stuff, and they were getting away from it, getting away with it because they had already infiltrated the C-suite and they had already been telling them, they've been getting the pat on the head. Oh, good boy. Oh, good boy. And
But do you remember when we went to that C-suite meeting? Because we had to shut it down because we had to kill all the rumors. I remember me, you, and Pam went to meet with Mike Parker. Mark Parker.
Yes.
Yes. Clear difference. Okay.
Mike Parker is my dude. We didn't meet with Mike Parker. We met with Mark Parker.
Okay.
We
had to nip it in the bud because it was bubbling. It was bubbling. And I think on campus, it was becoming this thing of entertainment. They don't know. We got other people who in the know. So finally, we went to a meeting. And you know what? After this meeting, we shut it down.
But do you remember the look on Mark's face when he, for himself, for the first time, spoke with us?
Yep.
Did he look like he saw a ghost? Did he look like, who are you and what?
Yeah, because I feel like we had this list of all the things.
I was told we had on the business.
Yeah, I think we had this list of all the things that we had done. And we had another list of all the things that we wanted to do. You know what I mean? So they could see that, the vision that we had. To be honest, after that meeting, I don't think we really had a problem again. Not only did I know the people who they was going after in New York and America. Look, I knew the Japanese people. He had stuff on his desk. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, I know whatever Fuji. Well, go. I forgot his guy name. Whatever. I knew them Japanese people, the French people. Who y'all want? Yeah, ain't nobody hotter than these two people right here. I don't care. And he got it that day.
100%. And I had already laid out a global strategy and global entertainment strategy for the brand. Remember, we talked about that.
They implemented after you left.
Oh, okay, then. I'm just wondering. But here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. And this, to me, because I know this sounds like a gripe session, but I know that there are women all over America who are going to hear this and be like, oh, my gosh. That's the real Me Too. Not to diminish the other one, because the other one is obviously important. But raise your hand, women, if you literally had to fight for your life within your company simply because of your gender. And then raise your hand, women, if you also had to throw in race on top of that. What I remember happening after that is I got invited to be a part of the Next Step program at Nike. Out of 30,000 employees, they invited 20 of us to be part of the next level of leadership for the company, where once a month they would fly you in and lay out in front of you all the strategic plans for the company globally, because one day and what the company's solutions were for some of the major problems they were facing, some of the new territories they wanted to enter, how they plan on making the company continually profitable, which weighs, because there's only so many shoes you can make, There's only so many shoes you can put out. So you have to have other types of strategy in order to continually be in the black on these balance sheets, right? So as part of that next step, I was the only black woman, right? I think there was two women total. And yeah, I didn't see none of those guys. Not one of them.
Wow. Yo, big up, Nikita. Like, I mean, I don't know how many people listen to this podcast, but are you hearing me? This woman was one of 30 people identified to be a future leader of one of the biggest brands of our time, okay? Like, the Nikita, like, for real. Like, we just have to take a moment on that one. I'm going to take a moment on that one. Like, however you felt about it, like, we got to look at that for what it is. That is huge. I mean, it was just huge to be identified and to be selected, be a part of it, and be a part of the table, have a seat at the table. We always talk about having a seat at the table. You were officially at the table.
Yes. No, and I can say that. And some of the things I learned, I only went to maybe like 5 or 6 meetings before I left the company. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I saw, I mean, I saw a lot of things that maybe when we do our book version of the Soul Chronicles, we'll put in there, just in terms of what goes on behind the scenes. And I'm talking about the pure C-suite business decisions. And I'm gonna tell, is nobody better. No company better than Nike. Not one. At thinking about the strategy and plotting a way to it and having all the pieces in place and executing, nobody can execute the heck out of a strategy more than Nike can. When I got that opportunity, I just remember going into some of those meetings. A lot of the things, obviously, I can't even talk about because of our non-disclosure agreements.
Yeah.
But I will say that I saw God in it 100%. Wow. I'm like, oh, this is what triumph looks like. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is what it looks like when somebody means total evil, but God means it for your good. Right? And
woo!
And then what happened was I was able to decide. Now, this is where it is the most ironic. During one of the next step meetings, we did all types of stuff. So we looked at spreadsheets. So we talked about accounting, we talked about marketing, so everything. But in one of them, it was purely sort of personal investment, where mm-hmm. they brought in a speaker to help you look inward, right? Because you're going to be leading a global company, right? So help you look inward. Are you a full, whole person, right? Why are you here, right? Why are you bringing yourself to this work? Like, what does this really mean and matter to you, right? And it was in that session that I realized I'm done here. Is that crazy? It was in that session that I realized, you know what? There's more that I want to do in life. There's more that I want to be in life. You know, I was having trouble getting pregnant. I wanted a family. I just got married, never saw my husband. I have a big extended family. Never saw them. Never called them. Nothing. Zero. Mm-hmm. And I just realized that I didn't want to be a public success and a private failure.
Right.
And so I felt like, again, I had a view, right? I was sitting in a position where I could look out over the Nike landscape for the future. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, I've already accomplished everything I've wanted to here. Mm-hmm. And when I look out over what's next, it doesn't excite me, right? It doesn't appeal to me. Would I make a lot of money? I'm sure people walked away with millions, right? We've heard stories mm-hmm. after they retired, right? Kudos to them. But for my own self, I was like, just the swoosh in and of itself, it wasn't enough anymore. Mm-hmm. I was never really there for that reason.
Right.
But yeah, so that became the full circle. And it wasn't then that I got pushed out, was mad and walked away. Right. Not that anybody ever said that, but I would have, if I had just stopped at that Wu-Tang thing, because that's mm-hmm. what we're talking about, mm-hmm. and just took all my toys and went home. I would have never seen the complete circle of it. And so that's why to this day, I have very fond memories still of Nike, even though there was some pain involved and there was some blood, sweat, and tears involved, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But it ended on my own terms with a happy little bow at the end.
That was brilliant.
Yeah, so.
Wow, this was like a super hot episode. I feel like we went through such a wide range of emotions. It was passionate. We got, this was a real.
I'm sorry. I started preaching. I might put my cash out.
This was, this is,
in a donation.
No, girls. Yeah, and by the way, people, you can sponsor, help us. This is a purely independent project, so feel free. You can sponsor $1, $10, whatever a month, just to help us with the cost of producing Soul Chronicles. So yes, if you were, look, we about to get to church on y'all. If y'all was inspired today, put something in that digital bucket.
A mess. Oh, hot mess. But for real though, yeah. But no, this was so good, Muhammada. And doing the Wu-Tang episode was totally your idea. And I'm so glad you did. Because you know what? I think, like, I feel lighter. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel
like a release. And let me tell you this.
What are you
speaking
saying,
about how you ended. Listen, so pretty much during my time at Nike, I didn't do a lot with Wu-Tang as a group, and most of the work that I did was with Meth, and it was so crazy. I quit Nike. It was a bit controversial, I'm not gonna lie. I quit Nike on a Friday. On Tuesday, I literally was on an airplane going to Ghana to go to graduate school. But listen to this, listen to this. I got to the airport. I freaking saw RZA at the airport.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. No,
and ma'am. I didn't know him though, right? Because I had not, I mean, I met RZA a couple times, but if I don't meet you like real deeply, I count it as really not meeting. But my friend Ashana, a shout out to Ashana Ayers, she used to work at Wu-Tang when she was probably like 17 years old. Then she went to work with Swiss Beats, right? So Ashana used to always be like, "You sound like RZA," because I used to be like, "I gotta get out of this matrix." You know, I used to call Nike the matrix, and she would always say, "You sound like RZA." So when I really got out of the matrix and I saw RZA at the airport, I was like, "Yo, this is crazy."
Muhammad, I never knew that.
Yes.
I never, ever heard that story before.
Full circle.
Wow. Well, I love it. And I think that's the end of whatever your journey is. I definitely think that that's the goal, is that you can close the loop and have peace and graciously walk away from the situation. No matter how many times people try to still call you in 2020 and say, "I was wondering about Nike." I don't work.
Like somebody called me like within the past 2 weeks asking me about Nike.
Always. You know, my friends, "Can you get my son an internship at Nike?" I mean, that I can do. I mean, I will still do that in 2020. But other than that, it's just like, I don't know. Shout out to Nike. Shout out to Stacey, Tracy, Anna, the whole crew.
Blanca. Some of y'all, we going to get on as guests. So we can just rehash some of these crazy stories that we know they went through. And look, most of those people are still there. So 20 years later, you know, I would just love to hear, because we bowed out gracefully, I would just love to hear how they've been able to manage that over this long period of time. So,
but they could probably only tell you so much, considering
of
they're
course,
still there.
Of course,
you know, we'll work it out. We can talk in code.
Yes. Well, good. Great episode, Nikita. Hope you guys all join. Be sure to follow us on social media at The Soul Chronicles. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. Yeah, so follow us. Share your feedback with some of our episodes. We love to hear what you think about today's episode and some of the other episodes. So stay tuned in to The Soul Chronicles, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America. Be sure to join us for another exciting episode.